Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 2 Samuel chapter 3, last part of the chapter, verses 26 through 39. We're going to see Joab, David's military commander, murder Abner, who is the military commander of northern Israel, which is, of course, still separate from Judah. David's king of Judah. This is during the 7.5 years when David was ruling Hebron before he became king over the whole Israel. Now, our context is this. In the last audio, first part of chapter 3, verses 1 through 25, Abner had it with Ishbosheth, who was ruler of Israel, because Ishbosheth complained about Abner allegedly going into Rizpah, Ishbosheth's inherited concubine, a concubine he inherited from Saul. That was a big no-no, to do that to a king's concubine. And it's not exactly clear whether Abner had actually done it. I suspect he had. He got very angry and decided to defect to David. And this, of course, was a big deal because then David would win all the northern 10 tribes without having to fire a shot. So Abner comes down to Hebron where David was, and they work out a peace deal. Everybody's happy. Abner left in peace. He's going back. In fact, Abner had already politicked with the elders of Israel and also with the elders of Judah. And everything's set. We're going to have a reunion of the king, of the two halves of the kingdom. But now Joab, who was out on a raid at the time that these peace negotiations were going on between David and Abner, he comes back and he says, uh-oh, I don't like this, David. You made a deal with Joab. He could have come down here to spy on us. And besides, he's such a great military commander, you might make him in charge of your military instead of me. And besides, he murdered my brother Asahel. You recall that story after the Battle of Gibeon. Asahel chased Abner down, and Abner kept saying, turn to the left, turn to the right, don't kill me. Asahel wouldn't listen, kept going, and he ended up with Abner's butt end of his spear stuck through his gut, and Asahel died, and so Joab's out for blood, as we'll see in this chapter. So that's our background. We start down in verse 26 and 27, 2 Samuel 3. When Joab came out from David, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the well of Sarah, but David did not know it. So when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the middle of the gate to speak with him privately, and there he struck him in the belly so that he died on account of the blood of Asahel his brother. Verse 26 speaks of Joab coming out from David, leaving Hebron, sending messengers after Abner, or leaving David at least, and then he sent messengers to chase down Abner, who had left to go back up north to Mahanaim, not Gibeah, but Mahanaim, where the northern Israel government was kept. And we don't hear how David responded to Joab coming down and moaning and groaning about the fact that David made a peace agreement with Abner. Joab just takes out. So we can speculate as to what happened. We can say, well, maybe David just didn't answer him and Joab left, or maybe David did answer, but the answer is not recorded. Well, if he didn't answer, here's some possible reasons why. Perhaps he wanted to wait until Joab's passion had cooled. I don't think that would have done him much good because Joab seemed like he was bound and determined to kill Abner. A better answer, I think, he was afraid of Joab's great power. Joab was David's military leader, and if David had cashiered him right then, who's going to take his place? Or it could be that Joab left so fast, so quickly, that David didn't have a chance to answer him. At any rate, Joab took out, without David knowing what he was going to do, sent messengers after Abner. These, of course, would probably be messengers sent out in the name of David, falsely, saying, please come back, I need to talk to you. If Joab had sent messengers out in his own name, in Joab's own name, Abner would have a good reason to fear that, might not have come back. So Abner, on his way out of Hebron, had gotten as far as the well of Sirah, and that's a place nobody knows where it is now, but somewhere outside of Hebron. And so then Abner turns around and comes back. Now David did not know of all this in verse 26. This is mentioned by the author to show that David was completely innocent in Abner's death. He had no knowledge of what Abner was doing. So what a high-handed thing for Joab to do, to act in the name of the king of Judah without the king's permission. A gross case of military insubordination. So Abner comes back. There's talking in the gated Hebron, speaking privately. Abner probably went in there unsuspecting, probably thought that David had forgotten to tell him something, and Joab was just relaying the message, and the next thing you know, he's dead. John Gill says of this murder, quote, the murder, however, was one of the most unprovoked and wicked, and such was the power and influence of this nefarious general that the king dared not to bring him to justice for his crime. In the same way, he murdered Amasa a little time afterwards. We'll see that in chapter 20 of 2 Samuel when we get there. Joab was a cool-blooded, finished murderer. Treason and murder ever keep together like two yoke devils. Oh, well, I agree. Joab was a jerk. Now, it says in verse 27, the reason that Joab killed Abner was on account of the blood of Asahel, his brother. And I've already told you about that story, Asahel tracking Abner down after the Battle of Gibeon and refusing to stop his pursuit. And finally, Abner had no choice to kill him. Well, that's the reason. But there's probably some other reasons, too, that Joab killed Abner. Abner had a lot of military talent. He was very popular with his army. He was influential all throughout the nation of Israel. David would be greatly in Abner's debt for bringing all the northern tribes over. And so Joab was going to lose power in the kingdom should Abner live. So that's another reason, but not to mention his revenge for Asahel, but also because of his fear of losing place in the kingdom. And also, he might have genuinely thought that Abner was down there on a mission to Hebron to spy out Hebron in order to destroy Hebron with a military advance from the north. Joab might have thought that Abner was using a ruse to spy out David, to destroy David. So those are some other possible reasons, but the one reason this mentioned is because of the blood of Asahel, so I suspect it was mainly private revenge that he's upset about. We go now to 2 Samuel 3, verses 28 through 29. David heard about it later and said, "I and my kingdom are forever innocent before the Lord concerning the blood of Abner, son of Ner. May it hang over Joab's head and his father's whole house, and may the house of Joab never be without someone who has a discharge or a skin disease, or a man who can only work a spindle, or someone who falls by the sword or stars." Oh, is David ticked. He said this in a public manner. He said, John Gill says, it's in open court before all his princes. Now, that's an inference there, but I think it's true. Had to be somewhat public. The author of Samuel found out about it and wrote about it. Now, why would David so publicly utter a curse on Joab, knowing that Joab's going to hear it? Well, David knew that the friends of Saul might torpedo their agreement of union, that peace treaty that they had just negotiated. And David's going to get the whole kingdom without having to fight for it. And then here Joab goes and does this stupid thing. Pulpit commentary says, quote, "It was no slight matter to utter so bitter a curse upon a man so powerful and whose military skill was so essential to the maintenance of his throne." But David felt strong enough to do it. Now, he didn't feel strong enough to relieve Joab of his command at the time. He later relieved Joab of his command. If we read between the lines at 1 Chronicles 11:6, David said, "Whoever's the first to kill a Jebusite will become a chief commander. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, went up first, so he became the chief." So it sounds like he had been cashiered for a while and came back. And then, of course, later when David dies, he tells Solomon, "Take care of this guy." And Solomon killed him. We'll talk about that later when we get to Kings. David is a master politician, as you see here. He's in a bad way politically. But he knows he's got to get those northern Israelites back, and so he publicly curses Joab and his children. Now, David says that he and his kingdom are innocent concerning the blood of Abner. Well, when somebody's blood is spilled, there has to be another somebody's blood to take care of it, unless it's in a war. Now, Joab could not claim the right of a kinsman avenger. He couldn't say, "Well, I just killed him because he killed my brother. That's the law." No, Abner had killed Asahel in war. He had not committed manslaughter against Asahel at all. In fact, he'd given Asahel every chance to escape. So that's not going to excuse Joab of what was nothing but bloody, filthy, stinking, cold-blooded murder. So let's look at this curse, this imprecation of David. He was real good at imprecations. "May it hang over Joab's head and his father's whole house, and may the house of Joab never be without someone." Well, first of all, we see that the curse on Joab was not just Joab, it was also his children. "May the house of Joab never be without someone who has a discharge." In other words, may Joab's children have people who have bloody discharges, hemorrhages, which is obviously indicative of some sort of disease, or a skin disease, like leprosy, what they used to call leprosy, the skin disease. "Or a man who can only work a spindle." Why that? Well, he's been injured, he's so weak, he's so effeminate, that's the only thing he can do is spin clothes like a woman. "Or someone who falls by the sword, either by suicide, but most probably fall by the sword in battle. Or starves because he's so poor, or because he's been reduced to such penury that he can't eat." Pretty serious curse. Now, of course, this brings up the old problem of how can someone who loves God so much imprecate someone else? Cambridge Commentary says the Talmud, the Jewish Talmud, regards David's curse here as very sinful. Well, let's think about it. Joab, I think, individually deserved it. He was a cold-blooded murderer, and he should have been executed on the spot. But David let him live, but he pronounces his curse. But the problem with that is, how about his family members? Didn't the Bible say that people will only be put to death for what they do? The law, I don't have the verse, the quotation in front of him, but that was in the law. Well, to get David out of the moral difficulty of having uttered an unjust imprecation on someone's family members, Adam Clark says that this was not a curse. It was a prophecy, is what he says. Quote, all these verbs may be rendered in the future tense. It will rest on the head of Joab, etc. This was a prophetic declaration which sufficiently showed the displeasure of God against this execrable man. In other words, we would read it this way. It's going to happen. In the future, this thing is going to hang over Joab's head and his house. And it's going to happen that the house of Joab will never have a discharge, will never have a man who is without a discharge or a skin disease. And it's going to happen that there's going to be people in Joab's house who can only work a spinning wheel. And it's going to happen that only someone, that there's going to be, it's going to happen that there will always be someone in Abner's, in Joab's house who will die by the sword. Well, I don't think so. I don't think you're going to get away with that. I mean, by saying it's going to happen pretty soon, that gets pretty close to may it happen. I want it to happen. Well, if we're not going to go that route and say it's a prophecy instead of a curse, we need to point out that just because David said it here, that didn't mean it was morally right. The scripture just records it with no hint of approval or disapproval. So we can agree with the Talmud that he shouldn't have done it. But however, I must say, he's doing this publicly and trying, it's a political thing. He's saying this so that he can remedy a very bad situation, which should never have happened to him because of his idiot general's actions, which were independent of David's desire. Well, maybe the situation ameliorates David's guilt, but it still doesn't really get rid of it. But perhaps David can be justified the same way his imprecatory psalms are justified. David was acting as head of a government. He was not acting in personal revenge, and he was doing what governments have to do, which is to take care of the bad guys. He actually could have taken care of the bad guy worse. He could have killed him. Now, there's something about, I still don't see how that takes care of imprecations falling on his family members. They didn't think the way we do back then. I'm an American. I'm an individualist. We think that if you do the crime, you do the time, not your sons, not your daughters. But, of course, that's not the way the world actually works. You do suffer for the sins of your fathers or your mother. Let's say she's a crack addict and you're born as a crack cocaine addict. Well, you suffer for the sins of someone of your mother, not you. And she was probably beaten and abused and abandoned by her deadbeat husband, so you're suffering for what he did. We move now to 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 30. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle at Gibeon. So here we see that Abishai apparently conspired with Joab to knock off Abner. Abishai was in on the secret of the assassination. He consented to the murder and gave advice about it. We can speculate reasonably. He's probably standing by to assist if necessary in case Abner ended up fighting Joab, figured out what was going on, got into a sword fight with Joab, and if he had gotten in trouble, Abishai would have probably stepped in and finished off Abner. Let's repeat the fact or the argument that this was an unjust taking of life. John Gill says for this killing there was, quote, no just reason at all. That's Asahel's blood was shed in war, this in peace, in cold blood, and under the guise of friendship. That, talking about Asahel's killing by Abner at the Battle of Gibeon, was shed with that blood, Asahel's blood, was shed with reluctance because Abner did everything he said. Asahel, go back, go back, go back. And after fair warning and in defense of himself, it was self-defense. But this murder, this killing that Joab did was done willfully, unawares to Abner, and in great deceit and hypocrisy. Now, later on, as David's about to die, 1 Kings 2, chapter 5, he's talking to Solomon. He says, now you also know what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, Zeruiah is David's sister, what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, David. This is David's nephew, by the way, Joab, that David is cursing. You know what Joab did to me, what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, that would be Abner and to Amasa. Amasa we'll talk about later. He killed them. He also shed the blood of war in peace. In other words, David had just made peace at Hebron with Abner, and then Joab killed him. And he put the blood of war on his belt about his waist and his sandals on his feet. So basically, David's telling Solomon, take care of this jerk. And that's what happened later on. But not during David's life. David had Joab to deal with all the rest of his life. 2 Samuel 3, verses 31 and 32. Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, tear your clothes and gird on sackcloth and lament before Abner. And King David walked behind the bier. Thus they buried Abner in Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. So Joab has to participate in this public lamentation for the man whom Joab killed. He didn't flee. He wasn't brought to justice, and that shows how much power he had. In the last verse of this chapter 3, we'll get to it in just a minute, David says, I am weak today, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zeruiah, talking about Joab and Abishai, they're too difficult for me. May the Lord repay the evildoer according to his evil. So in other words, David said, I can't bring him to justice. I just can't. He got too much power. But he did put them through a shameful ceremony. Now, of course, this was politically necessary. This was to convince all the people of the northern kingdom, the Benjamites and all the rest of the northern tribes of Israel, that David was sincerely sorry about this. He had nothing to do with the murder. It is quite ironic that Joab was forced to give public homage to Abner, a man he had murdered. Well, when the onlookers see this, people would at least see that David was in charge of the kingdom. He might not have been able to take Joab out and punish him and execute him or relieve him of his duties, but at least he was in charge. So David split the difference with Joab. And I'm sure Joab's thinking, well, I'll put up with a little bit of public humiliation. I'll still be general. And I got rid of that nasty Abner. So all this sackcloth and ashes and lamenting all has a political purpose. And David walked behind the bier publicly in the funeral. John Gill says it was not usual for kings to attend a funeral, according to the Jewish rabbis, to go out of the doors of their palace after their own dead, and much less others. So for a king to be walking in a funeral was quite a show of contrition. David is doing this to root out of the minds of the people all suspicion concerning Abner's death. Jameson Fawcett and Brown say, quote, David's feelings and conduct on hearing of the death, together with the whole character and accompaniments of the funeral solemnity, tended not only to remove all suspicion of guilt from him, but even to turn the tide of popular opinion in his favor, and to pave the way for his reigning over all the tribes more honorably than by the treacherous negotiations of Abner. Now, I don't know why Jameson Fawcett and Brown say Abner's negotiations were treacherous. I think he was negotiating in good faith. Maybe what they mean is the dangerous negotiations of Abner. There's always the chance that Abner could be pulling a fast one. But at any rate, providentially, David, sitting pretty, he's getting ready to take over the whole kingdom. All this weeping he's doing is no doubt sincere, Gill says, not done for political reasons. I mean, there was political advantage, but David was probably also truly sorry about the death of Abner. After all, it was Saul's first cousin. When David was in the kingdom of Saul, Abner was there. We go down to 2 Samuel chapter 3, verses 33 through 34. The king chanted a lament for Abner and said, should Abner die as a fool dies, your hands were not bound, nor your feet put in fetters. As one falls before the wicked, you have fallen. And all the people wept again over him. Now this word fool, should Abner die as a fool, David laments. The NIV translates that word as lawless. Should Abner die as a lawless man? John Gill says the word fool in Scripture is often taken for a wicked man as opposed to a stupid man. That's the way we take it. So should Abner die as a man outside the law, as a man who's broken the law? No, he should not. That's the answer to that rhetorical question. He didn't do anything wrong. Verse 34, you, Abner, your hands were not bound nor your feet put in fetters. That's what you do to criminals, and you were not a criminal, and that's why your hands weren't bound and your feet were not put in fetters. As one falls before the wicked, you have fallen. Ooh, the wicked? That would be Joab. David calls out Joab in a public lament. Wow. And all the people wept again over Abner. They were moved by David's lamentation. Now, all this public lamentation, Adam Clark says, must have galled Joab extremely. I guess it did, but he had no choice. Like I say, he's the general. He's got his blood revenge, so he just puts up with it, but I'm sure he didn't like it. He might have also realized that David had to do it, too, to get the Israelites on his side. 2 Samuel 3, verses 35 through 37. Then they came to urge David to eat bread while it was still day. The they there is just unnamed Israelites came to urge David to eat bread while it was still day. But David took an oath. May God punish me and do so severely if I taste bread or anything else before sunset. All the people took note of this, and it pleased them. In fact, everything the king did pleased them. On that day, all the troops in all Israel were convinced that the king had no part in the killing of Abner, son of Ner. Now, the reason they were asking David to eat bread before the sun set while it was still day was because it was the custom to bury people in the daytime, and then after the funeral, food was sent over to the surviving relatives. That's sort of similar to what we do today. This is from John Gill. David says, "Nope, I'm not going to eat any bread. I'm not going to do anything pleasant because I'm lamenting Abner's death. May God punish me." That's another one of David's oaths. That shows how seriously upset he was over what Joab had done. I tell you, in the Old Testament, they were always taking oaths. As the Lord lives, may God punish me and do so severely. Well, the funeral was probably in the morning, and so from afternoon to sunset, David didn't eat. That's no big deal. But he made a point of it. Not going to eat the traditional bread after a funeral because I'm sorrowful about what happened. Again, this is all great show. In fact, in verse 36, all the people took note of this, and it pleased them. Everything the king did pleased them. Now, this, of course, does not mean all during David's reign. He did a lot of things that didn't please the people. But here, it's talking about everything that David did here. The vow not to eat the bread, but also all of David's actions concerning the funeral, walking behind the bier as a king, burying Abner with so much pomp and ceremony, that's what pleased the people. And so the result is, on that day, all the troops in all Israel were convinced that the king had no part in the killing of Abner, the son of Ner. So all this public display of grief carried out its intended effect, and David is sitting pretty politically. All Israel were convinced that he was innocent, and that means not just Judah, or not just the northern tribes, but Judah also, his tribe of Judah, and all the other tribes, everybody was convinced that he was innocent in the killing of Abner. So we go to 2 Samuel 3, 38 and 39, and we'll finish up this audio. Then the king said to his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? I am weak today, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zeruiah, are too difficult for me. May the Lord repay the evildoer according to his evil." Now, when the king is talking to his servants, I'm sure that's to his closest advisors. He's not saying this publicly. David tells his advisors that a prince and a great man has fallen. Remember, Abner was of the royal family. His father was Saul's uncle. In other words, Abner was Saul's cousin. So Abner was more than a military man. He was of royal blood. He was also called a great man here by David. This is his enemy. David's being very gracious here. He was called a great man, as John Gill says. Abner was, quote, a very valiant and skillful commander, a man of great wisdom and parts. David confessed in verse 39 he was weak, even though he was a king, anointed king, he was weak. And David is probably trying to explain to his advisors why he had not punished Joab. As I've said earlier, he had to leave it to his son Solomon to take care of Joab. I've already read you that verse. Well, let me read it to you again. First Kings chapter 2, verses 5 and 6. Now, you also know, David tells Solomon, what Joab, as David's about to die, what Joab the son of Zeruiah did to me, what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner the son of Ner, and to Amasa the son of Jether, whom he killed. He also shed the blood of war in peace, and he put the blood of war on his belt about his waist, and on his sandals on his feet. So act according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to Sheol in peace. In other words, bump him off. Well, David in verse 39 says he's weak today. He can't bump Joab off. David only has one tribe under his government at the time. The other northern tribes have not come in yet. And Joab and Abishai had usurped his power. Here's an application point here. You've been prophesied over, like David was prophesied that he would take the kingdom. And look how weak he was. And so the application point is this. Just because God's prophesied something over you doesn't mean things will be easy. Let's say God's maybe not prophesied, but told you, you know, I'm going to do this for you. And you're convinced that God has personally spoken to you and going to do something to you, and then all hell breaks loose. That's the way it always is. Things are never easy before God's word is fulfilled. And the point of that is so that you will trust in God and you will not treat him like a genie in a bottle, that you will have faith in God and not just think he's out there putting rose petals on your bed. David calls the people who've done this to him, Joab and Abishai, the sons of Zeruiah. Remember, Zeruiah is David's sister, and she was the mother of Joab, Abishai, and Asahel, who's already been killed by Abner at the Battle of Gibeon. And so Joab is and Abishai are David's nephews that are causing him all this trouble. So not only is it a political problem, he's got trouble in his family. David says that Joab and Abishai are too difficult for me. And of course, that sounds like they're difficult to deal with. But some people take it to mean that they were more hard. In fact, the King James translates it as hard. They're harder than me. In other words, I was merciful, David said. I spared Abner, but they didn't. So they're more hard than me. Well, I don't think so. I think they're too difficult to deal with is the way I take that. And then he finishes off with another imprecation. May the Lord repay the evildoer, that's Joab, according to his evil. Well, Adam Clark says that's a prediction. No, I think that's a curse, an imprecation. Let justice be done. I don't have any problem with that because that's just an individual. Joab deserved the judgment that's coming on him. Ladies and gentlemen, with that interesting story over with in chapter 3, we are now ready to go to chapter 4. It's a short chapter, verses 1 through 12, and we will see the king of Israel, Ishbosheth, murdered. Murder, murder everywhere. See you next time. Hope you enjoyed this audio.